Show Recaps Theater presents Movies. So many movies as reviewed for you by your friends at Post Show Recaps. Featuring Grace and Ariel and their incredible movie takes, we hope you enjoy the show.
That's right, everybody. We are back. My name is Ariel. I am here underwater holding my breath with my co-host, Grace. Grace, how are you doing?
I'm trying to keep you underwater. If you could just... Sorry, a bit of a spoiler.
It's so dark already.
Sorry.
Oh, yeah. We are here to talk about the movie. I almost said hit movie, but the movie...
Kind of.
Deep Water. Yeah, there are definitely some hits in it.
Yeah.
Deep Water, the Ana de Armas, Ben Affleck, erotic psychological thriller.
And that's what Wikipedia says, folks.
I'm just reading Wikipedia. Yeah. It's accurate. You know, having seen the movie, I cannot disagree.
Yeah.
It just released on Friday the 19th.
Yeah.
And or on the 18th, actually.
Yes.
And it was, I think, originally supposed to be released in theaters. I'm not 100% sure, but I know that it was at least, as many things were, delayed because of COVID. And it feels wild. Like, this movie just came out and it's like, here, watch it on streaming right away.
Yeah, it's this is one of the unique ones where I feel like it's kind of like a big movie that is not a Netflix movie and streaming exclusively. Like, it is not also in theaters. Might be streaming somewhere in theaters, but like not nationwide. It definitely feels weird that it's delayed because of some of the background, drama that is associated with this film in some ways. So, I thought it was fun. I thought it was very fun. So
this movie is not boring. Like,
no.
I think you could say that it has boring parts, but it is not for me personally. As Grace said, it is not a fundamentally boring movie. Full credit, of course, goes to Ben Affleck and especially Ana de Armas for carrying this movie, because under, you know, less capable hands, or in less capable hands, I guess I should say, probably much, much more of a train wreck than what we got here.
Yeah, I totally agree. Yeah. I mean, it's directed by an Academy Award nominated director, Adrian Lin. Directed Fatal Attraction and was nominated. He knows his way around an erotic psycho thriller.
Yeah, and he's... Yeah.
He's back.
This man is not young. Like, and I'm not being shady. Like, this he was born in 1941.
He's 81 years old. Yeah.
Which, all credit to him. I mean, he made Unfaithful, which is definitely like the more recent of all those movies that we've mentioned so far that he's famous for. Like, these are movies that are, you know, Flashdance. Like, these are well-known, well-respected in some circles movies.
But Unfaithful came out in 2002. He's taken a 20-year break. He was like 61, and he's like, I think I'm retired. And then he's like, oh, actually, I'm going to do this movie with Ben Affleck and Ana de Armas. Fascinating decision. Fascinating choice. So fun.
Yes. And, you know, I believe it's hard to, you know, it's hard to watch something like this and wonder, like, when they were filming, because, you know, in real life, we know now, and we were getting, you know, pictures of them when they were filming and stuff. But Ana de Armas and Ben Affleck were temporarily an item. And you can totally see why when you watch this movie, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
Two actors seemingly not having to do too much acting for certain parts.
No. And who's Ben Affleck with now?
I don't think you've heard of her.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yes, a woman named J-Lo. I don't know. No, of course. Oh my God. Of course I know her. It's just Grace who doesn't know her.
Who?
Who is J-Lo?
Okay. Yeah. This movie not getting great reviews, but again, I really loved it. I thought it was so fun. So there's, you know, there's so much to talk about. I'm very excited.
Yes, there is so much to talk about. There's such a large, sprawling cast to get into. We have already mentioned the stars, but we have Tracy Letts is in this movie. I was shocked. Like, I was like,
with like a huge role. Well, I mean, like, I don't think anybody has a huge role other than Ben and Anna, but like, it's a pretty big part of the movie. Yeah.
Yes, he is. And we get Nate from Euphoria. I just don't know his real name.
Jacob Elordi. Yes. Which is funny because Adrian Lin directed Jacob's Ladder, and that kind of sounds like Jacob Elordi. You know, it's their names almost sound the same. Yes, which must be why he was cast. This is our second Tracy Letts movie on the pod. He was in Ghostbusters Afterlife, although he was uncredited.
That's right. I forgot he was in that movie.
Yeah.
His voice.
Yeah.
He's got a great voice. Greatly good at being like a jerk in any scene.
Yeah. He's also he showed up this week in Winning Time. So I'm gonna get lots of Tracy Letts in my life in the next few weeks. Yeah.
Letts him in.
No, it was great. I loved it. Good fungus, as we say on the red. Yes.
Thank you. I strive to have good healthy fungus. Good. Yes. So you know, we already talked about, and you know, we stand on this podcast, I think we've talked about it before, a great child actor who happens to be adorable.
Yep.
And this movie has that in Grace Jenkins.
Yeah. Hello. Grace Jenkins. Hello. Yes.
Grace.
So I cute. Mean, she's great.
Is this why we're covering this movie?
Yeah. Yeah. All movies that have a character with the name Grace, we will be covering on Post Show Recaps Theater.
I'm very excited. That actually makes it a lot easier to choose certain things.
I know, yeah. Why didn't you cover that movie? Like, it made $1 million. The box office, like, yeah, it didn't have any characters named Grace on it, so
sorry, skip it. No, yeah. Grace. But speaking of names, am I the only one who thought, like, wow, the names in this movie are really stupid?
Like, Vic Van Allen? What's wrong with that?
Melinda, like, no. And to be clear, I just want to say before I continue down my list, my gripe is not with the particular names. It is like with the total amalgamation of all of these disparate names. Like, it just seems so ridiculous that they went out of their way to pick all of them. The movie is based on a book, so I imagine some or if not all of these characters' names were probably extracted from the book, but man, we get Vic Van Allen, like you said.
Van Allen, yeah.
Melinda. I don't know that she has a last name, but it's probably Van Allen.
Van Allen. Yeah, Melinda Van Allen.
Their daughter, Trixie.
Van Allen. Uh-huh.
Tracy Letts is Don Wilson, which I guess is a normal name. But
no, I do feel like this movie goes from like weird to then too basic, you know? This is Vic Van Allen. This guy's name is Don Wilson. You know? It's two.
Kelly Wilson. Charlie Delisle.
Charlie Delisle. I love that. That's Jacob Elordi's character's name. It's Charlie Delisle. Piano man himself, Charlie Delisle.
Mr. Delisle. He is called several times throughout the movie. He's called Mr. Delisle. I'm like, this. Yeah. He's a child, basically. He was just in high school.
Like Charlie the Child.
He was just in high school like 2 months ago on Euphoria, and now he's Mr. Delisle.
Well, some people think that all the Euphoria actors are too old to be playing high schoolers. So, you know, Jacob Elordi out here being like, hey, I'm a real adult, man.
He's like, listen, I'm 8'7", but I could be 15.
He's so tall. Yeah, that's true. He's
crazy tall. And a Brit. So, you know, he's doing great acting work as usual.
Is he a Brit?
Or is he Irish?
He might be Australian.
Clearly he's from New Zealand. And I just said, I am an ignorant American.
No, it's fine. And Grace is here to save. He's Australian, but that's fine. Yeah.
We'll figure that out. But yeah, just the names. I feel like I needed to. There's a Mary Washington.
Yeah, Mary and Kevin Washington. Yeah.
I just, yeah, I I say no. I say no to those names. Jonas Fernandez, the Dash Mihawk. I'm totally butchered that name, but he's Bunchy from Ray Donovan. Great actor. Mm-hmm. Played Jonas Fernandez, like the least Jonas Fernandez looking person I have ever seen in my entire life.
Well, you know, yeah.
Just something I thought I would bring up.
No, it's great. It's a great point. Yeah.
So I'm just gonna talk about some parts of the movie. There are gonna be spoilers, so please proceed with caution if you care about that stuff.
Very quickly, I think we normally it was, you know, I think that like lots of people, there's no need to watch this movie. But if you are, if you like, just on like the reviews is it's a bad movie. I think it's fun because I think it's like it's, but it's a movie that I'm kind of watching, knowing it's not going to be that good. You know, that's why I enjoyed watching this movie. So, you know, I think it's worth watching. But if you're like into the end of it, it's like that was just actually a bad movie. And it wasn't, I think you'll know, like, yeah, you can skip it. But talk about it with us in the Discord if you are going to watch it. Because I think there's many reasons why this movie is like hilarious to watch.
Yeah, I think this is for sure fun to watch, not alone, as you were just getting at with friends, however comfortable you feel doing that, whether in person or virtually. The movie has a couple of boring parts, but I do not think that it is boring at all. Mm-hmm. And some of the writing is at times cartoonishly bad, but as I already said, like these two are doing such amazing work. Like I could kind of watch them be weirdly angry / passionate / annoyed with each other for much longer. But
yeah,
it kind of works. Like it works in this really messed up, twisted way.
I agree. I totally agree. So yeah.
Anyway, so Vic and Melinda Van Allen are married.
The Van Allens.
The Van Allens. The Van Allens. they live in Louisiana, which I was very happy because my brother lived for a few years in Louisiana, and I immediately was like, oh, wait. Is that architecture? Wait, is that Louisiana?
Ooh, wow! So, you spotted the Louisiana architecture.
I mean, it's probably so. Everyone who's listening is probably like, "Oh, it's so obvious." They shot in New Orleans or something like that. But I don't know. I was proud of myself.
I'm proud.
And they, thank you. I like being supported. They clearly have. There's this thing we talked about this briefly right before we started recording. We're like. There are parts of the movie where you are wondering what you're missing. The most immediate place where that happens is like in their marriage and specifically in like the communication of their marriage and what they do and clearly do not at all talk about. They don't seem like they're living in the same reality at times. Like basically she is... In an early scene, she's throwing herself at this guy, this blonde guy, and Vic's friends, Ben Affleck's character, Vic, his one friend is like, listen, we're worried about you.
Blonde guy has a great name. Joel Dash. He's a musician. His name is Joel Dash.
I didn't want to say
it. Yeah. His name is Joel Dash. He's a musician. He's a little blonde man who she's all up on.
He's got to go. He's got a dash, and dash he does eventually, but not before he causes a scene, gets like threatened by Ben Affleck. Like Ben Affleck plays it really cool to his friend. He's like, it's cool. I trust her. You know, there's nothing going on, even though she's like, we're all worried about you. And then he goes to the guy and he's like, hey, you heard of this guy, Martin McRae, I think his name is, something like that.
Yep.
We in the audience do not know who that is yet.
No idea.
And he's like, no, yeah. And it's basically a guy who died, a guy who they knew, actually is missing just at this point.
He is missing, yeah.
And
he's been missing for like a month, yeah.
And Vic takes credit for killing him and is like, hey, you know, you better be careful around my wife.
Yeah, it's very weird. It's so strange. I mean, I actually think, again, I think that like all of the Ana de Armas and the Ben Affleck stuff is actually like pretty good, if not interesting. I actually think it is. And like, yeah, this Vic is super weird. It's like, yeah, the last person who was like hanging out with my my wife, I killed them. So have fun.
And it's honestly, that's what he gets. That's what Joel gets because he's so brazen with it. He's like, hey, man. Like, he's like, are we, he thinks that they're going to bond over him sharing basically his wife. Like, this is so wild. Like, in what world is this, does this make sense that you can approach a person and be like, wow, man, your wife, she's great.
Well, they very clearly have like Vic and Melinda very clearly have some agreement, you know, in place that like, this is fine, that you can just like, you know, be with whoever you want. So like, I can see that if like Joel has only ever really like chatted with Melinda and like, is your husband going to get like really mad? She's like, no, he's totally fine with it. You know, yeah. That he has this like confidence because of what Melinda has told him. So.
No, for sure. And I think that's a great point because that is one of the things that you're kind of wondering the whole time is you see some conversations between Vic and his wife, Melinda, but you don't see a lot of the kinds of conversations that you would think you were going to see in this kind of movie. And they, in some ways, I think the agreement that you're talking about, which it becomes clear there is in some form, might even be an unspoken thing, because there don't seem to be like clear rules. But the thing I kept wondering was like, I want to see what Melinda is telling these people. Like, I want to hear her spiel, like kind of what you were getting at, that she's like, is she telling him, these guys, like, we have an open marriage, he's okay, he likes it. Like, I guess at the end of the day, it kind of doesn't matter, but I was just so curious.
No, I think it's a good point. I think it does matter. There is pieces of this movie that in order to, I think, try to keep the viewer at like somewhat of an arm's distance away from like who, what is happening, like that they are choosing to leave out a lot. Like, ironically, I think like the movie is called Deep Water. We don't get into very deep water, I think, with like anybody in this movie, you know, like we do not like get to know them particularly well. It's all like, you know, like what they're sort of saying and showing at very like surface level, right? And below it, you know, it feels like very dark, mysterious. But even like the idea that there like is some agreement, right? Like, I do feel like the movie could do a little bit better job. There's a moment where a scene where Melinda did not come home the night before, and part of the agreement, like, there is a kid involved in this whole thing, right? They do have their daughter Trixie,
who seems so well adjusted.
Right? Yeah. Well, reality. She does not stop playing one particular song on the Alexa, but other than that, you know, and so she is well adjusted. But I think that there's like a sense, at least for Vic, of like, you can do what you want, but you also, you know, have to be around, you know, like the idea is that like, we're not going to go through a divorce so that it's not like complicating Trixie's life, which they don't, I think, do a good job of showing us that probably enough. It's just, I think I've taken a lot of that from like making, you know, connecting the dots. But that moment where like Melinda doesn't come home and then he, you know, he's like, where were you? And she's like, you want to know where I was? And then he's like, we have a family, you know, is what he says, which like, I guess you do, but also like, you are kind of like letting her do, like, it's weird that like, that's the line, like you didn't come home. So I don't know.
Anyway. Yeah. That's where they draw the line.
Yeah.
And to your point about the deep water, like, is there any point in the movie where there is any
deep water?
Body of water?
No.
Much to the chagrin of Vic's character for reasons that we will get into.
Well, I kind of feel like this is what Adrian Lynn is like kind of trying to, is that like everything comes to the like it all is like surface level, that like get into deep water, it's like dark and you can't see it and whatever. I think it's kind of not great. Like, I kind of do want to eventually like see the deep water, you know?
If for no other reason than when you're trying to hide a body, wouldn't you try to find something deep? I just, you know, in a perfect world, I guess. But I just,
I don't know.
It's a lot of winks and nods at, like, to your point, some, you know, clearly some thematic meanings and like extra layers of things, but none that feel very deep, unfortunately. So basically we go through like several stages of this, of like, there's a new guy, then he disappears, then she gets angry, but like they do this. It's so fascinating to watch them because they're constantly trying to outsmart each other, out-analyze each other in a way. Mm-hmm. And they never talk about things like, the scene where she gets flowers from someone, mm-hmm. and then she puts the flowers on the table and he knows where they came from. And then he immediately goes and throws the flowers in the garbage and we get no follow-up scene. There's no argument. There's no like, why did you throw away the flowers? It was just like, the flowers are just gone now.
So I do think there is a world where this is like a pretty good movie. and this is because I think the like, you know, it's based off a book. I don't know if the book has good reviews or not. I did not look that up. But I do feel like the basis of the story are there. And they just don't really do enough with any of them to make it like worthwhile. Because I think very clearly what is happening is like they're both obsessed with each other in a very unhealthy way. In the point where like Vic clearly does not like that Melinda has all these other like, you know, men, but I think she actually also loves that Vic keeps like scaring them off, or mm-hmm. more than scaring them off. and I feel like I did not realize until so, because they do not want us to, I think, I don't know, I feel like they don't go deep into Melinda's character. It's like, I'm going to jump to the end of the movie now, I feel like, but feel like it's not till the end of the movie that I realize that that is what's happening, right? Because there isn't like this scene of like her reacting to the flowers being thrown out. Like there mm-hmm. aren't these like moments that like we really get to see her and why she's like kind of okay with like the way Vic acts, even if she's not like always okay with how Vic is acting, because she actually, I think in some ways does like that, like, this is how he chooses to act, because they're both sort of obsessed with having this like very unhealthy relationship. Or like, I don't know if Vic is as much. I think Vic is like okay with doing really bad things to try and like maintain and try to like figure out how to win her back in some ways and have like a sense of normalcy. Or I think she's like super okay with like him doing bad stuff to try to like woo her, I think.
Yeah, there's this, you know, to your point about the relationship, there's points where like she wants to push him, and I mean that emotionally and physically, like she's trying to incite anger from him, or, you know, like a physical altercation or whatever. And then there's like this weird blurring of the line of like, oh, it's hot and like we're doing this thing in a relationship, but no, you can't be that way. And like it's so weird because they do seem to know each other really well in some ways and like really understand each other, as at least as far as how they relate to each other and who the other person represents for them in the relationship. But like, I'm thinking about the scene specifically where she just gets mad at him for, God, what was it? I think they were having the guy over for dinner. Like, even the way, so she invites the guy over for dinner. There's like three salmon steaks, right? They're cooking for three people. And then he's like, can I help? And she's like, no, you can't help. Get out of here. Like, the way they shame, there's this thing that they do that they shame each other publicly in front of each other to each other. It's crazy. Yes. It's like so. So
I mean, part of me thinks like, I don't know whether this like movie is it like, would this be, you know, I think there might be a reason why Adrian, what is his name? Lines. Is that his name? Line. Like has not been directing for 20 years. Cause I do feel like there's part of this movie that like, you could look at and be like, wow, Bennett, like they're kind of just like abusing each other. And where does that abuse like start, you know, in terms of like them being like either physically abusive or like emotionally abusive to each other. But I do think what this movie shows is that like, they are both abusive to each other in many ways, although it seems like he's like the one stopping her, like he's kind of the one clearly is more in love with her than she is with him, mm-hmm. because otherwise they would just have a divorce and she could go hang out with whoever she wants. You know, she could be with whoever she wants, but he clearly at some point wanted to, and again, this is where I feel like we're kind of thrown into it,
mm-hmm.
thrown into the deep end.
Right. only figuratively.
because we don't see how that, what the deal is, what the negotiation is. Like, is it him like being kind of manipulative to be like, you're going to ruin our daughter's life if you like go and do all this stuff. And then she's mm-hmm. kind of doing it anyway, you know, like there's a bit of something missing, I think, that like would add some nuance and like complexity to this movie that I do think there is something in there. I just don't know mm-hmm. if the movie did it.
Yeah.
But they're dynamic together. So.
You know. No, it's fireworks. Like you can't fake that kind of chemistry. And like to your point, you mentioned the daughter, and I think one of the few times that we do seem to get a little bit of information that we, for the most part of the movie, are kind of lost and feeling like, wait, what's happening? What is she doing? Like, I watched it with a friend, and the whole time we were just asking each other, wait, what's happening? Like, I was checking in with her to make sure that I wasn't missing something. But at one point they're talking about the daughter, and he mentions the daughter, and she says about the daughter, that was your choice. So
yes, she does say that was your choice.
So it sounds like she didn't want to have the daughter, obviously, you know, in some capacity. We don't know the situation, the argument that they had at that point, but it's they want to stay in each other's orbits. They don't want to, as angry as they may seem, as irrationally upset. Okay, so we get to a really great action piece where I say action pieces. It's like the most some of the most action that we see in the movie. But they're at a pool party, basically, and you know it's all adults being adults and drinking and hang out, and they're hanging out in the pool, and some people are inside, and it's raining, and then Vic and his friend are the last ones in the pool, in addition to one of the guys that the wife is seeing.
Yeah,
and
this is Charlie Delisle.
This is Mr. Delisle.
Mr. Delisle.
The piano prodigy.
Man. Mm-hmm.
Yes, the piano man. And you see it coming from a mile away, but Ben Affleck is like, he's got the, I need to kill you now. Look at his eyes.
I did not see. I kind of thought that with that Jacob Delordi, I guess I've overblown his status. I was like, this is going to be the rest of the movie. Like, no, he is killed in the pool. And then this is where the movie actually, I'll let you finish. I do think it's a great, in terms of like an action piece, I do think it's like, it's one of the more like well shot scenes, I think, with like the rain and the pool. Mm-hmm. I do think it's funny when they're like, this is a weird, just like human thing where it's like, mm-hmm. you're swimming and they're like, oh no, it's raining. We're going to get wet. We're going to go inside.
Okay.
Inside. It's like, you're just going to get wet.
No, it's dumb. So I can speak from experience. Being in a pool when it's raining and it's not too cold out is very fun. Like, yeah. I'm not a person who's I don't even like umbrellas. I have my waterproof sneakers that I wear when it's raining and then I'm out the door. But
wow, I didn't know we were both anti-umbrella. This is great news.
Yeah, I'm not like anti-umbrella, but I'm definitely south of,
I'm going to edit out
of umbrella agnostic. You're going to edit out the not. So as I'm saying, I am. No,
that's right.
They're more cumbersome than I need them to be. I need one that like folds into my pocket, into my wallet.
I get it.
But yeah, most times I just put up my hood and I'm on my way. So, you know, he sees his opportunity, and seemingly, I mean, I guess to your point, we do see he's capable of murder several times, but like, it doesn't seem to be a premeditated thing per se. It's like he decided in that moment, even though I think the plot is leading us there, he's like, oh yeah, this is perfect. I'm going to kill this dude because there's nobody else around. You can't really see anything from the house because it's raining, and I'm going to drown him.
So the way this is shot though, right, is like we don't see him. We don't see him kill him. Mm-mm. What we see is like they all go inside and then the body floats like up dramatically, mm-hmm. which I also thought was like a pretty good, like I have questions about whether that's actually what
happened. Some of the best body floating I've ever seen.
Yeah, Jacob Elordi.
Jacob Elordi for being so tall. He's a great body.
Great floater. It's really great. And then they like have the argument inside, like where the police, right? They like try to do CPR on him, and the one guy like drops him and he hits his head. And then they're inside, and they're like talking about what happened, and like kind of everybody sort of like telling the story as in like he must have just been really drunk and whatever. And then Melinda like says like, no, you killed him. Like you killed him. You killed him. And it's like freaking out. And this is the first part of the movie that to me, I was like, that doesn't make sense. Mm-hmm. Because I was like, the movie can't just be that Vic kills all of Melinda's boyfriends. That is too basic. So part of me was like, oh, is it actually then? So at this scene, I'm like, oh, maybe it's Melinda who's killing all of her boyfriends. This like this weird plot twist where like you thought it was Vic. No, it's Melinda. And I was like, that one. She's like, now she's trying to frame it on Vic. I didn't get that either. And then no, it just turns out. And then later I was like, what if they're doing it together? I was like, nope, that's not it. Mm-hmm. It's just Vic is killing everybody. So
yeah. And to my point, I guess a little bit about Vic, I think the same applies to her, that she, Melinda doesn't, they don't really think things through, they just act out of passion. So in that moment, like I think it becomes clear certainly by the end of the movie that she, in whatever twisted way is reality for them, they do love each other. And but in this moment she's yelling at the cops and like that she's like actively and openly publicly accusing her husband of murder. And it's kind of like, oh, so then maybe they're not on the same page. Like what agreement is this?
And this is the first time where we're like, we get like, we've seen like Vic tells somebody that he, you know, they're like very, I almost think like one of the things that's like interesting that they made this choice, but I actually just don't think it works, is him just like them both sort of just like being so public about everything. Yeah. Like Vic just being like, hey Joel, you didn't want to know what happened to like Marty McFly or whatever. And you're like, okay, like
spoiler alert for Back to the Future Part 3.
Yeah, they're doing a reboot. This is actually a prequel to the fourth new Back to the Future 3. I don't know. I'm like, I feel like, why does he do that if he actually like, okay, there's this whole world where you can be like, oh yeah, he's just like admitted, like he's guilty, and nothing is premeditated. It's all like just happening. But I feel like that's kind of a mess of a movie when I look back at it. So
yeah, it's not, you know, it's not a, they don't thread every single needle, but it's fascinating to watch. And then you're just, and the whole time you're wondering, what in the holy hell is going on?
I don't know.
And they're both convincingly weird. Like I loved when Tracy Letts later on in the movie says to him, you're a weird dude. to Vic. And it's like,
a lot of a big headline about this movie is the involvement of snails. Vic keeps some snails. And this is when Vic, after Vic has hired a private investigator to look into, no, sorry, not Vic, Don Wilson, Tracy Letts' character, has hired a private investigator to look into Rick. And then Rick.
Vic.
The name. Okay, I think you're right. The names are too.
Oh,
I'm pretty sure the private investigator's name is Rick.
Yeah, I think. Oh yes, wait. What's this? I'll get the name. But
Don
it's
hires
name.
Rick to look into Vic. Okay, mm-hmm. That's what happens. Mm-hmm. And then Vic like figures it out. He like goes to the diner and he's like sits down with it. He's like, oh, I was just picking up lunch. Like, oh, who's this you're hanging out with? And figures out it's the private investigator.
His name is Disney. It might as well be. It's his name is David, but his last name is Rick Giuliani.
Ricky Gliani. Okay. So then, now that they've been outed as being like that, Don has paid for private investigator. That this is where they're like very weird. Vic is like, why don't you and Kelly come home? You can come over for dinner. And then this, like, you know, the men hang out with the men, the women hang out with the women. The men go to the snail collection where like Vic is just showing him his snails. He's like, stop telling people I murdered that guy. He's like, well, I think you might have murdered that guy. You're a weirdo, man. Yeah.
Yes. And I love this is, yes, and he says, you said you killed him. Do you believe me? He's like, no, you're a weird guy. The snails are such a weird thing to me, because ultimately we get a piece of dialogue about them that I think is so funny, because to your point, it's like, what, the whole time you're watching, you're like, okay, is he feeding like the dead people to the snails, is what I'm thinking. I was like, where do the snails come into play in this like weird effed up story? Like, what's the element? What's the layer that I'm missing? And then there's a guy, Tony, at this, just another guy, who says, it sounds like Melinda has, again, in one of those instances of like casual cruelty at each other, she has told Tony that Vic's snails are for eating. So she's like, we'll get some butter and garlic and just first of all, delicious. Escargot is delicious. Like, I'm sorry, hot. I don't know
it
if
is.
It's hot, but
it is good. Yeah.
And he's like, the snails are not for eating. And the guy's like, oh, I'm sorry, what are they for? And Vic's like, the snails are not for anything.
Not for anything.
It's like, this is like a piece of the movie, like explained.
Like, if we just like turn the camera around to Adrian Lin, he's like, the snails are not for anything, not a metaphor. It's like in like a high school class when you're like, teacher's like, and why were the curtains green? And someone's like, I think the author just wanted the curtains green. It's like, no, it's because of envy. You're like, I don't think so. I don't think the curtains are green because of the snails. Mean nothing. Big headline came out about the movie. The snail wrangler, Max Anton, who's the official snail handler for Deepwater. This is the actual subline from EW. It says, the exotic thriller's official snail wrangler reveals secrets from the set. It says, Ben Affleck was exceptionally good with the gastropods. So...
I believe it. He's a very good actor. He takes his craft very seriously.
You know who played those snails?
Who was it?
Scarlett Johansson.
I was just about to say, was it Scarlett Johansson?
Yeah, and Chris Pratt. Yeah. So. They're fine.
It was not Anna de Armas.
It was not Anna de Armas.
She looks so good. She's such a chameleon. Incredible. I'm sorry, chameleon's the wrong animal. They're snails.
The snails are in that, right?
Yes.
Why does he hide? So, well, I mean, I guess we're not there yet, but yeah. So Charlie's dead in the pool.
Yes, Charlie's dead in the pool. They get away with, he literally just gets away with murder, like in no uncertain terms. The cops talk to him.
Okay, hold on. It's absolutely, we see the scene, and this is where I'm like, I'm like, maybe this is going to be, and like, Vic is imagining all this stuff, but then we'll like cut back and it's actually like, Melinda's actually killed everybody who we're seeing. But then like, he drowns him in the pool. Does nobody like nobody comes and like, yeah, there's like a, like claw marks on his shoulders where somebody clearly like pushed him and submerged him into the pool. Like, there's no sign of struggle from the,
sorry, as the coroner, I'm probably distracted by the blunt head trauma from when they drop the body.
Like, it's true. So brutal. Sorry, as you do have to say, if Don messed up the most in this movie, it's definitely dropping the body of the guy who was already dead.
And it's so funny to see Tracy Letts be the butt of that joke in that scene where they're all like, I mean, he's the one that dropped him.
He dropped him.
And Tracy Letts is like, that did not make a difference in the death. Like, he's just like trying to avoid that.
He was already dead. Yeah.
I gotta say, the most unrealistic part of that is that they all realize, because Ana de Armas does a great scream, they realize the body's in the pool and four people jump in the pool at the same time. No. I'm calling shenanigans on the four people. Like, you need to do a staggered jump in the pool. If I'm seeing a body, I'm not waiting at the count of three and we're all going to jump in unison.
They say, I remember when I took my, CPR courses when I used to work at summer camp, was very good. That one of the most thing, the thing that often happens is that nobody calls 911 because everybody is standing around being a bystander. So they did a very good job of making sure someone called 911. I do think that Melinda
just kept asking, is anyone doing it?
Well, it's good. Kelly eventually does it. Yes. I do think Melinda pulling Vic off of him doing CPR was a bad choice. But other than that, it's like, maybe, you know, you don't know what happened. Maybe, I guess she did. So I don't know. Anyway.
You're not even trying.
You're not even trying to do CPR.
so bizarre. Like it's obviously like a very like morbid effed up scene, but like it's just, it's ridiculous. It's like it's on a long list of insane, ridiculous things that happen in this movie. So basically we get to who will eventually be her final, I almost said victim, because she's basically choosing Vic's victims.
True. Yeah, that's interesting. I didn't think about that.
Yeah, I mean, to that point, yeah, like they're not working together, but are they?
The movie will never tell you.
I'll never tell.
Again, fans to the director. If the snail means nothing,
and the director's just like shrugging.
And I'll never tell you if they're working together.
The snails are sending them mind control thoughts. So I do have to mention the daughter before we get to the final thing. The daughter, such a ride or die with her dad. Mm-hmm. She's basically like, how'd you drown that guy?
Is he in the tub too?
And because she's playing around with like a little scuba guy. Like, yes. Did his feet touch the ground? Like, she's asking all the right questions.
She never gives it. He's like, honey, I never did that. He's like, yeah, but like, just tell me how you kill him.
She's like, I don't believe you. And he's like, all right, but let's just keep that between us. Like, now she's an accomplice. Now you're like getting her involved in this.
Yeah.
I mean, she's like I said previously, she's a very well-adjusted child for like all the stuff that she's probably
seen. No, I actually thought a lot of the kids stuff in this movie was really good. There's a scene later where I don't think it will come up. He drops her off at school and then he's like, love you. And she goes back, like, love you. And all of the children in the school go, love you. Like,
and everything's cool. Like, she couldn't be any happier. We support healthy expressions of love.
Right. I love it.
And even just like the way she'll run away from him, like it's like a commercial. It's like almost, it sounds fake, but she's so adorable and it seems so sincere. Where he yells, I love you, and she yells back, I love you, like even louder, and she runs off to school.
The kids, I love you. It's so great. It's hilarious.
They're all like, yeah. Wow, we've never heard that before. No. It's dark.
So anyway, my dad drowned a guy.
Yes. Yes. And she even says, oh my God, to that point, she says in the tub, she says, everyone keeps asking me how you did it. So clearly, between him threatening to kill people at the beginning of the movie and then seemingly also kill people and at least being suspected of doing so, it totally makes sense that kids in the town would, you know, parents talk and kids hear and kids are asking her in school, how did your dad kill these
The guys? Whole reason Don thinks that he might be a murderer is because he told Joel Dash that he murdered someone, and then Joel told everybody. Like, I wish people would stop talking about the murders I did. It's like, you, A, did a murder, and then you told everyone you did a murder.
Don't do the murders.
Vic Van Allen. You idiot.
Oh, if they only knew. If they only knew. But maybe Trixie will be able to like pull it off like some real good street cred. You know, like, don't mess with me, I'll get my dad to kill you.
I would watch the Trixie sequel. Deeper water.
Deepening waters. Also, like, I would thought of what's her name? I was like, oh, is this the origin story for Beatrix Kiddo from Kill Bill? Trixie?
Oh, yeah. Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Lots of violence, lots of murder. Anyway, so yes, we meet who will eventually become the, not just the final victim, but the final like important new boyfriend that we meet in the movie, Tony Cameron, who...
Which is just the names of two British prime ministers. Come on. Right? Tony Blair, David Cameron. Yeah, okay. All right.
It's just, sure. No, I did get okay. It. It's just...
No, I had to make sure that my joke was technically correct. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, it's okay. Trixie gets it. She'll never tell. So Tony, who actually has more of a history with Melinda than others. Grace, did you know that that Tony was the first American that Melinda had sex with?
Yeah, that's great. Good for them.
Good for them.
Played by Finn Wittrock.
Yeah, he's very that guy. Like, if you look him up, he's like, oh, I've seen him. He's
La La Land. Yeah. Big Short. He's been everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Not that short, but
no,
you know, convincingly annoying. I'll say that. So basically, you know, they have, of course, the awkward hangout, the awkward dinner, like Melinda loves inviting these people over to their house so that they can all sit at a dinner table and snipe at each other and complain about his cooking and then bond. And it's like the weirdest, really. It's like you can almost make the case that there's something healthy about their relationship, even though there is barely anything that's healthy about their relationship.
I think they're like both addicted to this, right?
Yeah,
it's like the bit they're like, yeah, they just like whatever they're getting out of it, it's not healthy for them, but they're like, they love it. Yeah,
they do love it. So Vic, of course, gets jealous, and he encounters Tony in the wild in the town one day. He's like, Hey, Melinda's been trying to get a hold of you. You should get in the car with me. We have a site to show you. Some kind of like, I don't even remember, like a site visit, some random excuse. And he's like, cool.
Like, he does look hesitant. He's like, all right, sure. All right. You're not going to kill me.
Where has he been? Has he not heard all the rumors? Does he not know that there's basically a serial killer like running around?
He's new in town.
Yeah, he's new in town. Yeah, he's visiting from so-and-so, like DC or whatever, wherever he's from. So they drive into the woods, and Vic starts to ask him, first of all, that poor dog in the background, Vic's dog. Like,
oh, yeah.
The best scared acting from a dog who's sitting there like, dude, you're about to get killed.
Even the dog looking at the camera. Yeah.
So I was like, I don't know.
There's this little scene when they adopt the dog and Trixie's like, can we call him Roger? And Vic is like, you could try. What a great dad.
Anyway. It's very sweet. It's very sweet. And you know, they looked at the director and the director was like, absolutely not.
He's like, it means nothing. The dog? The dog, it means nothing.
We're not in Kansas anymore. So they get into the woods, and you know, Vic starts driving really fast and asking Tony all kinds of questions about Melinda, and like in a very creepy way, in a way that screams, wait, am I about to get murdered, or I might murder you? And then he's like, I should call Melinda, see if, and Vic's like, yeah, give that a shot.
Try it.
And lo and behold, there is no reception where they are. This is scary.
Yeah.
This is not great.
No, not great.
No.
And again, this is where I'm like, I mean, we did see the like the drowning scene. Like we do see him like drown the guy. But again, I was like, yeah, they flash back to it. So maybe he's not actually doing it. And like, oh no. Yeah, he's just gonna murder this guy. He's going to murder Tony.
He's going to do a murder, as we said previously.
Yeah.
And he really does, like, really casually picks up a rock. They get out of the car and just, like, full on chucks the rock at high speed. Like, would you say he is a good pitcher, like, based on
his form? Good aim. Yeah. I think it's, like, hilarious that he kills this man by throwing two rocks at him. He throws a small rock that hits the guy in the head. It throws a big rock that causes the guy to stumble backwards, fall down a hill, and hit his head on another rock that then kills him.
God. There's a lot of head hitting. Like him hitting his head here when he finally, after tumbling down this hill, he finally reaches the bottom and hits his head horrifically, to be clear.
Pretty brutal.
Yeah. I was like, oh, well, what's his name at the pool got off easy with like his little head.
Cause of death is... He chucked a big rock at him, like, here, catch, and he couldn't catch it. He like stumbled backwards down the hill.
Yeah, it's kind of incidental, like the accidental head trauma that comes, I guess, towards the tail end of him purposely trying to kill them is kind of becomes his calling card.
Both times, yeah. Wow.
It's bizarre. I think it says something about how deep the water is. No, but it just means nothing, as we know.
Well, the water will not be deep.
Vic, no, the water will not be deep, but that does not stop Vic from dragging the body, leaving all kinds of blood trails, but whatever. We don't have time for that. Into the water, and then we're just going to tie like one to two large rocks.
This guy loves rocks.
For a guy who loves rocks, though, he really overestimates their weight. And
yeah, he has too much trust in rocks. He has too much. These rocks, this one rock will do the job, won't you, rock? And the rock like doesn't say anything. Like, rock.
The rock's not allowed to speak because the director said no.
There's no meaning behind the rocks.
So yes, I'm gonna tie these. I believe it was two. It two. Might have been three. I do not think it was over two, but he ties the rocks with like one piece of like a belt. I don't even know what this thing is.
Whatever.
It's so tough.
Puts him in the creek.
And then puts him in the creek and makes sure that first of all, the guy's already dead, but he like submerges. He can't help himself, right? He's going to like try to drown the guy, right? By submerging in the body.
Yeah.
And keeping him down there. And he's like, are you good? Are you staying down there? Is what he's probably thinking. And it works. He's like, okay, cool. The body's just down there now, so I'm gonna walk away.
Great, I gotta go.
I gotta go.
I definitely won't come back tomorrow for a picnic.
No, but let's bring our wife and our poor somehow miraculously well-adjusted daughter to this park, and have like kind of a lovely conversation with the wife, where they seem to like connect in a way, even though it's still kind of seeped in like, you know, weird passive aggressive tension, whatever.
Yeah.
But I love where she's like, but you're not bored, are you? And like, she's like, no, how could you be?
We're not either. You know?
At this point, I'm like, is he going to kill her?
I mean, yeah.
You just don't know. No, but to her point, actually, yes, this was another exchange that I loved earlier in the movie. When she's accusing him of a different murder, he's like, oh, so you think I killed him? Like, so you're not scared of me? And she's like, no, because I'm the reason that you killed, something like that. And it's like, first of all, that exchange was very sexy. Second of all, wise. Like, yeah, you're not going to kill me because you keep killing people for me. Because
he just like has no, like, he's not defensive. He's like, I didn't kill anybody. You know, he's just like, so, are you afraid of me if like I killed him? She's like, no, you kill for me. Yeah, it's really good. It's really good.
It's really good. They're certainly not dumb. They're very toxic and
well, Vic said, hey, I killed a guy.
That's true. That's true. They can't.
She's
be
like,
dumb.
He did a murder. You know, they're like kind of giving up the game, you know, a little.
He did it.
She like helps Don hire a private investigator.
She did like, much, you know, better.
Yeah,
I gotta say, Ana de Armas did much better in Knives Out than she did in this murder mystery. Yes. I'll just say that.
Yes.
So she turns out that she leaves her scarf there, but he notices that the body has resurfaced because the two rocks. We're like, gotta go. Sorry.
We got rock stuff to do.
We gotta go rock club.
Yeah.
The rocks are like, nah, sorry, you didn't tie us tight enough. And he's like, oh crap. And then realize, luckily for him, it turns out that she left her scarf at the picnic place. And he's like, cool, I'll just ride my bike there in the morning or whenever he goes and go deal with the dead body. I mean, get your scarf.
Yeah.
And, you know, you have to believe that he probably would have made up an excuse, but it doesn't matter. Whatever. I guess it gives him an alibi, which I think is something that we'll come back to. And he's moving the body. He's trying to, it seems to me like he's just trying to do the same thing again. He's like, let me try more rocks.
He like is like poking it with a stick. What is he doing? He gets a stick, which like
maybe he will disintegrate.
He's like poking it, like just push it. That's not gonna work.
It's not acid. Like, it's water.
Come on,
it's not deep. What did you think was gonna happen?
And this is the this moment next is the most like what's that called when like somebody just shows up in a movie, like, you know, and normally it's like the heroic moment, like Deus Ex Machina,
Matrix,
Machina, we're like, yeah, they just show up out of nowhere, and Don's like, hey, how did you get here? here? How are you here, Don? Tracy Letts.
The guy who like blatantly believes and has told him in the movie, like we kind of glossed over this, but like has told him at several points, yes, I do think that you killed these, at least this person, at least the person in the pool, if not more people, because you told me that you killed that first guy, even though you seem to be kidding and you're weird. And me and your wife will then hire a private investigator to investigate you. I'm going to be like, oh shit, what are you doing
here? Hey,
fancy meeting you here. And he has, we see that he has the scarf in his hand.
How does he have the scarf?
I don't know. Like the only thing I can say is that like maybe the picnic area is by the road, but what is he doing there? We don't know. Did he follow him?
Again, there's just like a beat missing in this thing of like figure out how to get Don there in a way that makes sense, and like who cares about the scarf? Like because a second later the little hand pops up out of the water and Don's like, oh, you're a murderer. Like, and he just leaves. So why does he need to have the scarf?
Don's like, oh, crap. And then he runs away, trips going up the hill, like total amateur move. And then he runs and then he has the audacity to gloat as he's like, as he's driving away. And he's like, oh, I got you now.
You're
you
going effer. To jail.
Yeah, yeah. He's like, he's doing the full like ridiculous evil monologue almost like that a villain would have, because he really thinks that he's got him, and Vic is only on a bike, so he's like, I'm definitely going to be able to get away. But he underestimates Vic's ability to take shortcuts through the forest and the trees,
obviously.
And was Vic's plan here to like, that's what I couldn't understand. Was he trying to cause an accident? It seemed to me like he was just like chasing after him in the hopes of something happening.
Yeah, I don't think this is like, this is Vic's master plan. I don't get that.
Certainly. No, we don't go to from rocks to this master plan. Like, that's not crazy.
No. I wish he threw a snail at him or something.
Like, this is where the snails would have come into play. Like, he throws all the snails into his face and the snails start like eating at him, but like very, very slowly.
Yeah. It's like, they're not the escargot. You are the escargot. That
you are Scar. Gotta go.
And then he flies over the cliff.
Yeah. So speaking of, he jumps at some point. He gets ahead of the car, even though the car is like whatever. And, you know, the car has gone around like all these bends. And then Tracy Letts is going way too fast. Like, if I were running away from
or like Tracy, let's slow down.
Tracy, let's take it easy.
Take it easy, Tracy.
Like, I would be going for like, no, I don't want to say slow and steady, but like a very responsible like 55 or 50 miles per hour, and like consistency. Like, we're going for consistency over like max speed, because the max speed will mess you up. The consistency, slowly, you know, like slow and steady will get you. He's on a bike. Like, what is he gonna throw a rock at your window? Like, he doesn't have a gun.
Ariel, I want nothing more now than for you to be hired by a major motion picture to do a car scene chase. And like, why are they all driving so fast? They gotta slow down. Consistent. You gotta keep your eye on the road.
Listen to me. You're not listening. The snails don't mean anything. The car speed doesn't mean anything.
So we're going to have him run really fast. You're like, that is over the speed limit. So
listen, we're keeping everything legal here on this production. All right. I don't want to get shut down by anyone. So yes, eventually to your point, he gets in front of the car and Tracy Letts is like, oh crap. And he like swerves I'd be like, yeah, hit him, you know, but you know, whatever, I guess human instinct takes.
Well, this is the guy who's like, we probably shouldn't murder people.
Yeah. It's probably not
one guy in the movie.
The one guy in the movie. He's like, murder bad. Yeah. And he goes flying off the cliff into the same, not at all deep water that, that the body was trying that Vic was trying to drown the body into. And he doesn't even try to, you know, I guess at this point he's like, okay, clearly Tracy Letts' character is dead. Like, it makes sense to me that he would think there's no way he survived that. But also he just provided him with an alibi, right? Or like, not an alibi, but now he looks like the body has now arisen. The hand came up. Mm-hmm. And now Tracy Letts' car went off the road.
Oh, I didn't even think of that.
My friend
framed for the murder.
My friend was like, "That's it. That's his out." I should mention, actually, my friend is a lawyer, so that's probably why she went there. But she was like,
oh, she look, was there too right at the creep.
My friend was. She had her binoculars. Like, oh no, don't do that. Don't do that.
That's good. I didn't put that together.
I meant to look up to see if there was like any more in the book from that kind of thing of like if that's what they were trying to tease, because I didn't get there myself.
Oh, I didn't either. So again, missing some beats.
Yes, missing some beats. I don't really like beats. Golden beats are a little better. Anyway, so then she gets home and we realize that the very, very first scene that we saw at the very beginning of the movie is now where we ended up here, where he shows up with his bike and he's like very tired looking and she's waiting for him by the stairs. But in this case, we see that she found the wallet of Tony. So she realizes, because of course she's like, where's Tony? I've been calling him to have sex with him and cheat on you.
I thought this too, except in the first scene he gets undressed.
Yes, well he gets, because I did the switch and then the switch back. I'm like, wait, I thought it was, but then it wasn't, because what happens is she goes up the stairs and then he gets undressed is how I had explained it to myself in the
so weird.
Oh, because he's about to take off his shirt and then she stops him.
Yes.
Huh, maybe it's not. Maybe it's that this has happened before and it is happening again.
I do think what this scene is supposed to be, we're missing beats and it doesn't do it. But I do think if you like ask the director, I bet that this scene is supposed to show you that the entire time they've been doing this game together. Mm-hmm. Which like then contradicts the fact that like she's like, you murdered him at the pool. Like, I don't know why she does again, like,
because that's the thrill of their relationship, right? Yes. The thrill is that like they give in to every single emotion that they feel and every whim that think of. But they always stay together and they do everything in the service of maintaining their relationship, including and especially murder.
Like toxic, super toxic relationship.
It's like so toxic that like parts of it are kind of sweet. It's so bizarre. It's so messed up. But yes, here the snails get no after credit scene. Only the little girl, the daughter Trixie, dancing, like doing a full... from the movie Rush Hour, where the little girl is singing Mariah Carey in the back seat,
right?
And wearing like this a similar like, you know, like uniform, school uniform.
Yeah.
I was like, wow, look at that, a Rush Hour call out.
Wow.
And that's the movie.
I missed the credit scene, but yeah.
Well, yeah. You didn't miss much.
I'm gonna bizarre. Go watch it. Trixie's a part of the movie, so.
She's great. You can just fast forward to her scenes.
No, I did not hate it. It's funny. I've talked about this before. The Movie Ladder podcast will sometimes do this thing where they're like, someone will be like, yeah, like you watch the movie, you're like, yeah, I think that's like 2.5 stars. And then they would go on the podcast, they'll talk about it. And after like an hour and a half of talking about it, they'll be like, oh, I would actually give this movie like 3 stars. I think like I'm going to bump it up. And I feel like I came out of this movie being like, I'd give that like 3.5 stars. And after talking about it, I'm like, yeah, I think it's like a 2-star movie. I think it's actually worse than what it was when I watched it, because when you analyze it, I'm like, oh, there's so many like things that don't work. But in the moment, I'm just caught up in like, ooh, they're like smoldering, you know? They're
right. Like, yes, you're caught up in that, and you're like, wow, I can't wait to find out all the unspoken stuff. And you like really aren't told that much.
You're never told anything, and so you just like are like, wow, I guess, you know, in my head, you know, that's better. Well, so
it's so complicated, but like only in your head, like only all the blanks that you filled in like make it so much more complicated than the story actually can like withstand. It's fascinating. It's fascinating.
Years, I think there's going to be a remake of Deep Water. It's going to be way better than this. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So bizarre. But yeah, I think similarly, it's not like, wow, this is the worst movie I've ever seen. It's just they make such bizarre choices. And as we already talked about, they choose to just literally ignore completely certain things and not explain certain things that the movie is worse because of it. But
yeah, like this movie is made
to be seen and talked about. It is not made to be seen and enjoyed and like or like held up to a certain standard. It is made to be like a social water cooler like catalyst, basically.
Oh, I think for sure. Yeah. And especially like that, like there happens to be an even weird, like that they actually like were into each other on set and then they were together and now they're not together is like only adds to that whole thing.
Right. Exactly. Like it couldn't matter any less. They were probably like making edits and adding things. And then when they got together in real life, like F it, just like get it out.
Yes. Like, but when you're like saying like, I'm like, why did she say he did a murder in front of all their friends? And then you're like, cause she just like acts on instinct. You're like, that makes sense. I wish we would see that, like, she acts on her instinct. I guess, like, we do. Like, I guess the thing I'm saying is, like, I can see where Adrian Lynn and, like, you know, Zach Helm, Sam Levinson of Euphoria fame actually wrote this. And I actually think there's, like, a lot of similarities between, like, how he writes Euphoria and some of the stuff in here that he's just like, yeah, just put it in there for, because it will look great, you know? You know? That I feel like there is motivation for people, but we just, like, don't get enough of it. So then this movie ends up being, like, sexy erotic thriller, you know.
Yeah.
Which is fine. It's fine.
I mean, two, as far as sexy erotic thrillers go, two titans of that industry.
It's true.
Ben Affleck aging wonderfully, gracefully, I might even say, and Ana de Armas just, you know, seemingly at the height of her powers and not slowing down anytime soon.
What is she doing next? What does she have? I want to look at her IMDb. What's coming up for her?
Am I wrong in thinking that she's supposed to be at all in Knives Out 2? I know the cast is different, but
The Gray Man, Blonde, and Ghosted, read. All stuff that looks like she's going to be in soon. So it looks like there'll be more Ana de Armas, which makes sense. I think the only person who's staying for Knives Out 2 is...
is what's his name?
Yeah. I was gonna say the exact thing.
James Rock, James Bond, excuse me. Hopefully, anyway. Hopefully they explain in the movie Ghosted. Did they explain what the ghosts have to do with anything? Because we did not get that here.
Yeah, what if it's a sequel and it's all just about like their ex is haunting them?
It's like there's no explanation for any of these things. Yes. I think we've said enough. Is there anything else we want to say about this?
No, that's it. Chat with us about it in the Discord because I think it's fascinating, but that's it.
Yes. Grace, what do you want to do? Some quick greatest hits for what else you got going on?
Yeah, so I talked about Winning Time, covering that with Jason Reed. It's a Sunday night HBO show. Our podcasts drop typically Monday night, so check that out. Raised by Wolves, our coverage finished last week. Josh Rigler, Taryn Armstrong, and myself. Might be a feedback show this week. And then Our Flag Means Death, another HBO show with Taika Waititi and Rhys Darby. It's been very fun and very weirdly gay. Who knew? It's just
super... I saw that letter that Taika put out on, I believe it was on Instagram or Twitter, and
it was a fan writing a letter to Taika about like what the show means, because they like it's a comedy about pirates set in like the 18th mm-hmm. century or whatever, but they very much like have modern sensibilities on it, which like, you know, whatever. It's very fun. It's been very good. Yeah, it's been like super LGBTQIA+. So that's been very fun. Over on Rob is a podcast to cover sports with the Off Speed podcast. We will have a golf episode coming out this week. So I'll look forward to that. And for everything else I'm doing, you can follow me on Twitter at @HiFromGrace.
Incredible.
Human Resources. I should mention that. We did Lindsay Wilson and I did a one off episode for all of Human Resources. If you manage to binge it, or whenever you manage to binge it, the podcast is sitting waiting for you in your feed. So, yeah.
Oh, I didn't know we had a human resource department. That's very exciting.
I thought you worked in human resources. That was
where that's right. That's a Discord deep cut.
I know. I know. Yeah.
I was unceremoniously fired and then rehired as a freelancer.
As HR. Yeah. Human resources of PSR.
Oh, man.
PSR HR.
Yeah. What a time. But yeah, speaking of post-show recaps, I am covering The Dropout, the Elizabeth Holmes Theranos story starring Amanda Seyfried, also on Hulu with my co-host Marissa. We are now in the second half. That's going to be wrapping up in a couple of weeks. And there's other stuff coming down the pike, but I think I want to pull a LaTanya and perhaps just start teasing and hedging and not talking about certain things. But yeah, I think I'm on Twitter at that other Ariel. I am on Letterboxd at @AR_F as in Frank. And yeah, like Grace said, follow us on the Discord. We would love to see you there. But if you made it this far, we appreciate you listening as always. Take care. Bye-bye.